Education and healthcare reporting on SDPB is supported by Regional Health, helping patients and communities live well.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's one thing to follow the ongoing news of Brexit on NPR. It's another to watch history unfold in person. Augustana University students and professors recently returned from Britain as part of the course Brexit, the Great Divorce, and Life After the European Union. Joining us now in the studio, we have Augustana professors Jason Harris and William Swart. Professor Harris, welcome. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be here.
Professor Swart, welcome back. Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
And I want to get started here with the class in general. And Jason, you want to kind of talk about, it's a timely course, it's J-term. Explain how that all works for listeners who haven't been in college in a while.
Well, at Augustana, we have a fall semester and a spring semester, and then we also have what we call a J-term, which is basically we take a deep dive into certain topics. Some students also stay on campus and take your regular general education courses, but it's an opportunity for our students to travel abroad is one thing that we do at Augustana, and it's one thing that both Bill and I love to do, and this course provided an opportunity for us to do that, to go to London and spend 20 days in London studying Brexit and what it means from a business perspective, what it means from a governmental perspective, and how it might look going forward.
It was almost too good of an opportunity to not figure out how to be part of. When did you know that this was something that was really still going to be going on at this point?
Well, I knew back when they had the vote in June of 2016 to leave. That's when I got the inspiration for the course, because we have about an 18-month planning period, and so we actually went there last year as well. And I knew based on that it would still be going on for at least 2 years. Under the European Union Treaty, they have to give 2 years' notice before they leave. That two-year notice is, they gave it almost 2 years ago and will expire in this March, and so we knew that we had at least a window to do this course twice. We're also planning on doing it next year. Hopefully, we can do it next year, depending on how things shake out.
So. Right. Bill Swart, tell us a little bit about what, how you got involved and what your sort of your interests, what you were kind of bringing to the table as a professor that you want the students to kind of pick up on.
Yeah, really since throughout my graduate studies and even beyond, I've always been interested in sort of post-global responses. So what happens when globalization pushes the homogenization of communities and peoples in a variety of different ways? How do people respond to that? And that was partly what my dissertation focused on, but also what I've been interested in since. So it's always sort of, I've always been fascinated by what would happen as the European project evolved, what kinds of nationalistic responses would occur as that project evolved. So for instance, some of the work I've done have been looking at food, right? And the role of food regulations under the European Union and how national identities, which are very tied to food, right, spur up and try to fight against the homogenization of global food policies. So, you know, what is a baguette, right? How do we define what a baguette is or what champagne is when a broad supranational body like the European Union is trying to legislate trade agreements and all sorts of regulatory arrangements around those kinds of things?
When did you start studying this?
Oh, gosh. Back in the late 90s.
And did you have any idea how really pertinent it would be
not really. I mean, this has sort of been the gift that keeps giving, right?
But
it's just one more opportunity to explore, you know, what happens when, how national identities resurge amidst sort of the process of globalization.
Sure. Talk us through the trip, Professor Harris, a little bit, and sort of where the students sort of found themselves in at this point of history where things were unraveling, unfolding. Maybe unraveling is the wrong word. Maybe it's the right word. And what it was like to sort of be in that moment with students and yourself.
Well, this year was just absolutely fascinating because we knew we got a little bit lucky because they were supposed to vote on the exit agreement in December. Theresa May realized she didn't have the votes, so she deferred it. So it actually occurred while we were there. And so the students began to build a sense of excitement that the history was going to occur. The vote, I believe, was on a Tuesday. That Saturday, the students had toured Parliament, and so as they're watching the debate take place, they're like, wow, we were just there 3 days ago, and they could see it and feel it. We were fortunate enough that day to actually listen to and follow some of the debate. We were outside of London that day. We were in a town called Henley-on-Thames, and we were having dinner with some of the locals there. I have a longtime friend of mine that lives there, and their member of Parliament is actually Theresa May, and so we had an opportunity to discuss Brexit and follow the debate and see what happened. And it was, for the students, it was really exciting. It was the one time we said, okay, you can be on your phone right now and stream the video or follow the Twitter feed. So yeah.
There was a fascinating story on NPR yesterday about a choir that was singing protest songs. Mm. And they were a socialist choir, and so they were singing these songs about different socialist issues. But when it came to the issue of Brexit, the choir was divided. Mm-hmm. And so they were trying to write a song that included both sides for the choir to sing. So as you have friends there and you sort of are walking mm-hmm. around with the you know members of the public, what were you hearing? That this extreme division where nobody really was in agreement, or were you hearing one thing or another?
We spent most of our time in London. London is largely a Remain area. They want to stay part of the EU. And so we did largely hear the same thing in London. When we went to Henley, our friends were there, and then they invited two other friends, and there was actually a split there. One of the things that we noticed this year is that the level of the split is higher, the intensity of it is higher this year than it was last year. Last year, everybody just thought things were going to work out somehow for the better. And this year, as we sit here about 60 days away from the time that they're either going to have a hard Brexit or have some sort of a deal, they're a lot more tense, and they are divided, and there are people, there are friendships that are being broken up because of this, and we sense that in the people that we talk to in London and elsewhere.
What's at stake? When you look at a historical perspective and you look at sort of in these personal lives, you know, down to the level of friendships, is it an argument about identity? Is it an argument about the system failing? What are some of the big themes that are going on?
I think identity is a big part of it. I know there might be some that disagree, but it's not very. It doesn't take you very long. It didn't take our students very long once we arrived in London to get a sense that the UK is a very proud nation with a long history of trying to maintain its control of itself, and that control is threatened in some ways by a decline in the colonial period, but now also in response to the European project. So part of this is driven by a desire to put themselves back in control of their politics and their economics. And there are different vested interests. So if you look at the people in the fishing industry, for instance, or in the agricultural industry, very, very strongly align themselves in the Leave campaign because they want to regain control of their waters, they want to regain control of their agricultural products and fishing industry and not be under the European guidelines for fishing or agriculture. But if you look at the financial industry, is very much interested in, or many within the financial industry are very much interested in staying on the Remain side because they see London specifically as uniquely poised, both geographically and financially, to be a center of those services. And if they pull out of the European Union, they're going to have to figure out ways of offering those services to the broader European collection of European countries. So yeah, I mean, I think that it has created a kind of political divide on a variety of different fronts.
Mm. And I was going to add, what's interesting about it is, comparing it to the United States, there's some similarities in that there's rural versus urban divide. But the one thing that they don't have is it's not partisan. So what I see here in the United States is the Republican Party has one view and the Democrat Party has the other view. But when you go to the UK, the dominant parties are the Tory and the Labour parties. And so you have people that are members of Parliament that are Tory party, but the district they come in voted Remain, and the Tory party is more of a Brexit party. So that's one of the things that I find fascinating.
Jason's absolutely right. In fact, there was a study talked about in The Guardian 2 weeks ago that essentially argued that more people in the United Kingdom are identifying with Leave or Remain rather than a political party. So Brexit and the debate around Brexit is really dividing the community right now more than political party identification.
Are there similarities to what's happening in America now with, you know, with the conversation over immigration and the conversation over a government shutdown, where there's this sense that people don't know how to compromise, people are tired of compromising, and at this point they just, you know, want to win and have their way. Are you seeing that sort of parallels there?
Oh, absolutely. One of the speakers that we had was an author by the name of Ian Dunt, and he wrote one of the books that we had the students read, and that's one of the points that he made in his presentation, was that people cannot compromise anymore, that when you look at Brexit and what Brexit means, that there needs to be some compromise, that they may need to remain part of the customs union in some way, or the immigration issue. He pointed out, you know, that right before we arrived there were a slew of stories about people coming across the channel in man-made rafts, and some people saying, see, we've got this big immigration problem, and they don't have to, quote, build a wall there. They have all sorts of water all the way around them. But immigration is an issue there, just as it is here. But you look at a place like London, and most of the places that we went, you know, hotels and restaurants, would not be staffed if it wasn't for other people from the EU coming in and filling those positions.
If you've watched the past 48 hours in the UK Parliament and in the European Commission, one of the things that's very clear is that they're involved in this, I would liken it to a great big game of chicken. Somebody, each side is waiting for the other side to blink. Mm-hmm. Their withdrawal agreement has been passed with an amendment. Theresa May is back in Brussels, or headed back to Brussels, to try to renegotiate things that the European Commission says are non-negotiable. And it's kind of one of these situations where each side is waiting for the other side to give, but neither side is willing to give on their own.
Who is she negotiating with?
She would be negotiating with the key negotiators of the European Commission.
Okay.
Michel Barnier,
and he's sort of the lead negotiator. And these are people who have been experts. You know, they're very well poised and excellent negotiators. And so what may emerged with a package that the UK Parliament, particularly her party, can't agree upon. And so they're trying to tweak that agreement in a way that she can get her party to agree upon. But now the European Commission is not sure it wants to give. And so, again, it's like this big game of chicken where each side is waiting for the other side to blink. And neither side is publicly at least acknowledging a willingness to blink.
Did you see students sort of, you know, having those aha moments where they all of a sudden understood this fairly complicated conversation, not only from now I understand exactly how it's working and the nuts and bolts of it, but I see the parallels with America. Mm. I see these bigger, broader themes of globalization and global economies and what's ahead. Tell me about some of those moments where students just sort of lit up and said, oh, that, now I understand.
Our students did a great job this year of talking with people in the community, so people they met out and about, and really trying to do a lot of listening to get their perspective. And part of the perspective that they got was also a reaction to American politics by people in London. And I think they found it fascinating, and I think they did begin to see with a larger appreciation a kind of broader perspective on what's happening globally right now in politics, whether and the similarities between what's happening in the Brexit instance or what's happening in the United States.
And I think part of that was the project that we assigned them was each – we assigned them into groups, and then each group had to look at a particular aspect of Brexit, whether it was nationalism or transportation or the fishing industry. And so I think that forced many of them to get outside of their comfort zone and take a deeper dive into those topics and talk to people about those topics. And so we did see the aha moments.
What's happening in the European Union does have impacts in South Dakota on business and economic impacts. How do you think it's going to impact these students as they have some of these broader American conversations and sort of engage in the political process here at home?
That's a really good question. I think For some of the students, I think what the course did was open their eyes. About half of them had never been out of the country before. And so now all of a sudden they look and they go, here's a new way to do things. My hope is that some of them are looking and recognizing that there's something beyond South Dakota, beyond Minnesota, beyond Iowa, and that the impact of Brexit will potentially even touch South Dakota, and they can talk about it intelligently with their friends and family.